Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Today's episode is sponsored by my good friends at Timeline. Timeline is now offering the world's first ever longevity gummies powered by MitoPure. You've heard me talk about the importance of cellular health and our mitochondria, which is why I have Timeline as my favorite and most trusted sponsor. These are the only clinically proven Urolithin A gummies for strength and healthy aging. We may be living longer lifespans, but are we truly living better lives? What if the key is not just adding years to your life, but life to your years? This all starts at the cellular level. As we age, our mitochondrial health starts to decline, and one of the keys to living longer and healthier is keeping our mitochondria healthy and strong, and MitoPure targets this for us. Take control of your health now and live the life that you not only desire, but you also deserve. As a gift to all my listeners, you can save 20% off today by going to timeline.com/Dylan to get started. That's timeline.com/Dylan. I assure you, your cells will thank you. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. Now, you guys that all follow me, you know that I'm a very, very passionate person in every single thing that I do. And so when I have a guest like I have today, I get even more excited because her passion in what she specializes in is what I'm after. It's what I like to spotlight. It's what I like to interview. And we're going to drain her for information today. So I'm gonna introduce you to her. She's a licensed naturopathic doctor. She practices in Toronto. She's passionate about empowering individuals to take control of their own health, which you're gonna note very quickly. Her primary focus is to explore the underlying root cause and provide individualized patient-centered care. Now, she really utilizes, which I also love, evidence-based therapies, and she provides patients with the knowledge and tools needed to succeed. And her clinical focus is in women's health, metabolic health, and inflammatory conditions. But what we're going to really dive into and what she's well known for is her education and information on magnesium. And so without further ado, welcome Dr. Barb Wieger.
Thank you so much for having me here. It is truly a passion of mine, and I love talking about this mineral just because I don't think it gets enough attention for what it does for our health.
Thoroughly agree. And I had the pleasure of talking with you a little bit off camera and just talking about magnesium in general. And when I saw not only the passion, but the knowledge base, I was like, okay, this is it's something we have to get out there, because I don't see a lot of people that just kind of specialize in this topic. And I don't think that many people understand the importance, you know. Dr. Barb, I talk to a lot of naturopathics, a lot of doctors, a lot of highly respected, well-known individuals, and we always go through our top 5 most essential supplements or things that we need. And every single one of them, without fail, lists magnesium as one of those.
And I'm very happy to hear that. This is definitely my mission, is to create more awareness around this mineral. Because honestly, when I was in medical school, we didn't learn about it, not to this degree. It was a electrolyte. It was a mineral. And I feel like we don't give this mineral the respect it deserves, especially once we acknowledge and learn how much it actually does. And that's the awareness part, because a lot of people will put this mineral in with sleep and stress support, and that's it, done, right? And this is magnesium, and that's all that really is talked about when it comes to this mineral. But there's just so much more. Yeah.
We're going to go every angle on this, and I'm going to give you a little backstory on how I learned the hard way about the use and importance of magnesium this about a decade ago. But I before we get into all of that, I want to just get into a little bit about your background and what exactly you do. First, you know, as a naturopathic doctor, can you just tell people in simple terms what does naturopathic actually mean?
So I, as you mentioned, I practice in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And so a naturopathic doctor we are now part of primary care here in Canada. And so it's kind of like primary care with evidence-based background, but doing things more from a holistic and natural approach. We do work or coincide with medical doctors at times on patient care, but we are more focused towards the holistic side of medicine. But everything that we do, everything we use is typically from an evidence-based standpoint. So we order blood work. We have a lot of regulations in Ontario, Canada. So we're put in kind of with the medical doctors as far as those regulations are concerned. So we have prescription rights and we have, you know, ordering labs and blood work and stuff like that. And we just try to co-manage patients or manage patients on our own. So
awesome. And how long have you been doing that?
About 9 years in.
Excellent. All right. Well, I am a very big person on looking at the root causes and trying to be preventative first, right? And how we go about things. And that's one of the things that I have really, over the years, tried to spread the word about and the knowledge about is the importance of, you know, not treating, but preventing, right? And trying to catch things at the onset and taking control of things early on. And it seems to me, by talking to you and what I know about you, that you kind of have that same kind of belief system, so to speak. So can you kind of talk about that and the importance of evidence-based theories and things that you specialize in and you're passionate about?
Yeah, for sure. Prevention is a huge part of my job. It's one of the things that I would go through with every patient because we can do a lot in the prevention timeframe. I mean, obviously, we deal with patients that already have issues or already have metabolic conditions or inflammatory conditions, but prevention and also just treating the body as a whole, right? So when you go to a physician, they often treat you in compartments. And this is a problem because our body doesn't work in compartments. It works as a whole. And so this is really what naturopathic doctors do, is kind of take everything and then take the research behind those things. So we do a lot of research in how the body works and the physiological components of the body. And then we apply it to some of the modalities that we use, whether that be, you know, acupuncture or herbs or minerals or nutraceuticals or diet, lifestyle interventions. So we take all of those things and we apply it to the research. And a lot of research is also starting to come out based on all of those interventions. And so this makes it a lot more relevant for us as well. But this is really what evidence-based medicine is. Research is usually done for the mass of the population. You're always going to have one-offs and you're always going to have people that don't fit that bill. And so we have to be, you know, a little bit lenient in that we're not applying everything to every single person. And I think this is really true when we talk about magnesium, and we'll probably go into this a little bit later, but it's not a one size fits all. And that's really what's important to understand. Not everybody can follow the same diet, you know, sleep the same hours, exercise the same, take the same supplement. It's just not like that. It's not that easy. And our bodies are not designed like that.
I started doing my side personal training at 19 years old. I wasn't certified yet, but I had been like working with different types of trainers and an athlete my whole life. And I have been preaching this. I'm 43 years old, so I'm almost 25 years about there is no such thing as one size fits all with diet, training, what we need on intake. We all have different types of reactions. We're sensitive to certain things. And as what you do and like what I do, it's our job to figure out what that is for each person. And I think that a lot of people fall into that trap. And you tell me what you think on this is they go see a doctor for 3 to 4 minutes. They put you all in the same thing. They don't really ask anything about you. You know, you go in for cause X, Y, or Z. They don't ask about your stress. They don't ask about your sleep. They don't ask about your diet. It's just, well, here's your statin or here's your medicine for your mental illness that you may or may not even have. And so do you do more of that personalization and that more in-depth look into the people that you work with and just talk about what goes into that? And as somebody in your profession that takes it so serious, just the differentiating factors between going to just general practitioners.
Absolutely. I mean, here in Canada, a physician has about 7 or 8 minutes with a patient. So if the patient comes in with whatever the condition is, this is kind of the time frame they have built. And I think what we have to understand is that conventional medicine is great acute medicine. We need them. Right? We're not here to say that we don't need Western medicine. We do. I mean, they're great in acute care. They're not so great when it comes to prevention. And they're not so great with, you know, kind of keeping the body as a whole, right? So they're very individualized. They're very specific to what they're treating. And their regulations tell them that at a certain point, they have to prescribe X. This is just the way it is. And sometimes we do need that medication. I'm also not against medication in a time frame or in a place that it's absolutely needed. But my job, I get usually an hour with my patients and I get to really understand what's going on. I can ask all the extra questions. I can dig deep. I can go through all the lifestyle and all the diets and what they're doing and how their symptoms are responding based upon, you know, all of these different points. And from there, I can then develop something that's very individual to that person. And that is really, I think, where the beauty of this type of medicine comes in, is that, yes, sleep is important for everyone, but certain amount of sleep and different times of sleep and different circadian rhythms are going to be important for one person and not so important for somebody else who maybe is on shift work, right? So these are different things. And so I really spend a lot of time with my patients to get to understand their symptoms, understand what's going on in their bodies, how they're reacting to certain things. And from there, I can then develop a treatment plan that is going to touch on those specific things that we're trying to correct.
I love that. You know, I get these people that I will see that will complain about like a doctor like you or like what I do. And they, well, I only pay $30 or $50 to go to my doctor, but they don't see like what the actual charge is and how negligent on what they're actually getting is. And like the whole system, how it works, people don't see that or understand. And they also don't understand that when somebody like you is taking the time for one person and the amount of time and effort you put into that, you're probably extremely underpaid. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate that people are trained. And what you said, I learned a long time ago, because I have friends that work very intricately with big pharma, but they're not those kind of people. And they tell me the reason that, you know, we can't get prescribed certain medications is because if they start prescribing those, the insurance will pull them out of their network. And it's a sad, sad thing. And I'm sure you could probably touch or expound on that to some degree, that people don't have the proper education and understanding or access to things that they actually need.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, education is always, you know, great. Knowledge is power. We know this, right? And here in Ontario, we have a publicly funded healthcare system. So when they go to the doctor, there isn't any insurance or fees involved. They can go to the doctor. They can get all of their things that they need. When they come to someone like me, such a naturopath or maybe even a chiropractor, they're paying out of pocket. Now, there are benefit coverages that companies will give their employees, like health benefit company, and they can be covered through them. But I would say 50% of my patients don't have any coverage. They pay completely out of pocket to come to see me. And that's usually because they can't get the answers from the conventional system. So we are usually not the first touch point for these patients. They're coming to us after they've gone through the system and haven't gotten anywhere. And so now they're coming to us to kind of get a different perspective. So, yeah.
I would love to get some sort of statistical data, which would be impossible because they'd never let it out, but just how many people that, well, we just can't figure out what the cause of this is. You know, I mean, and the lack of digging and probably the ease of what could actually be found if somebody sat and analyzed blood panels for an hour or started digging deeper into things. And that's kind of what I do too. So I'm sure you see that a lot where you probably find things, probably even, I don't want to say all the time, but quite often rapidly, that were easily overlooked by a general doctor. I mean, I'm sure you've seen at all at this point, but do you find that there are some things that I'm sure you get difficult cases, but are there some where you're like, how did they not see this?
Yeah, but again, it's because we're compartmentalizing, right? So we're coming from, oh, you have X in this area of your body and you're not looking at the rest of it. But the other thing is too, our reference ranges for blood work is quite large, right? And so it's, you know, when they're going to get their blood work done through conventional medicine, of course, the reference ranges are going to try to include 98% of the population. Does that mean it's a healthy part of the 98% of the population? Probably not, right? Because we have optimal ranges that I want to see for my patients in certain blood work. And, you know, if they're going to their medical doctor, unless it's flagged or high or low, they're really not going to say anything because, again, they're within that range. And that's how they operate because they don't have the time to actually explore anything outside of that.
Right. 100%. Okay. Well, I appreciate all of the background and the insight. So now I want to get all the info we can get from you on what we were talking about with magnesium. So first, why magnesium? Why are you so damn passionate about magnesium? What caused this?
Well, this is going to kind of correlate with what we just talked about. So as I mentioned, here in Ontario, we have public health care. And so most patients are not coming to us first unless they really want to do a lot of preventative work and they know about us. So they're coming to us after they've run out of resources, whether it going to a specialist, a family doctor, whatever it is. When I first started, would get these patients coming in and they, of course, had gone through every specialist, every doctor, and they just couldn't get them feeling better. And they didn't know where to turn and they really wanted to try another approach. So these are the patients I had originally. And at the beginning, I was like so dug into the research. I would look at all these and I knew that they had tried all the regular kind of stuff. And so every time I went to research, I would be hit with magnesium. Like the research would come up, oh, check this, check that, make sure their levels are okay. And so I really did a lot of N of one studies. I would just send the patient home with, you know, a certain dosage of magnesium. I'd be like, check in with me in a couple of weeks. Let me know how you're doing. And unbelievably, like I was getting so much good, like, feedback and, oh, I feel better and this doesn't bother me the same, or this has improved 50%, or, you know, and I was like, okay, we're on to something here. And so I just kept recording like kind of the research that I had pulled out from these patients, and I kind of kept the little sheet. And eventually I was like, okay, there's got to be something going on here because I never learned any of this stuff in school. And I'm thinking, I need to look deeper into this mineral. And that started my journey into magnesium. And I think as of maybe about a couple of weeks ago, there were like 125,000 studies on this mineral. There's a lot of research behind this mineral. So it's very evidence-based. And that just, you know, I kind of then decided I wanted to start an Instagram page and I wanted to start promoting and creating awareness around this mineral because it's a simple mineral, but it's a mineral that just has not gotten the, you know, the awards that it should be getting for what it does. And a lot of us are deficient.
Yeah. Okay. So I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to put it all together into one. I brought up earlier about every single, you know, well-known doctor that I've spoken with, and we discuss our top five. magnesium generally pops up in the top 2 to 3 of essential things that we need every single day. And when I say supplements, it's not just bodybuilding supplements for people listening. I'm talking about essentials for our life to live. And so, one, do you agree with that? Which I'm sure you're going to say yes, but two, why?
Yes. So magnesium is definitely an essential mineral. And we kind of have to, we need to define what essential means. So essential means that your body actually can't make it, right? So it has to come in either through food, supplementation, or some form of transdermal way. So if you're not, so your body can't make it. And if you're not actually bringing it in through one of these three mechanisms, then you're likely not getting a lot of magnesium. Now, there is some through food for sure, but our agriculture, our farming processes now, they're so different. Our minerals are so much less in foods. So it's not, it's even if somebody wasn't supplementing or wasn't taking, they're likely not even getting the recommended dietary allowance amount of this mineral. So yes. So essential means we need it in the body and it has to come in from some form of supplementation, diet, or some form of transdermal action. So why is magnesium important? It's because it's got really, I like to call it like the top five that is really crucial for our health. And I think the number one is that it activates something called ATP. And ATP is our energy currency in the body. And so without magnesium, ATP is not active. It's inactive. So this is a really crucial part of health. We need ATP in order to sustain life. And so this mineral is part of that. It also regulates a lot of nerve signaling. So it kind of keeps your muscles contracting and relaxing in a proper fashion. That is absolutely necessary for us to even be able to get up, walk, move, all of these things. It also balances our electrolytes, which is are so important, right? So magnesium is part of the electrolyte package of sodium, chloride, potassium. And when those electrolytes are out of balance, we know there's problems. There's big problems. It's one of the, you know, if you ever go to an ER, the first thing they check are your electrolytes. They run blood work for your electrolytes. And so magnesium is a very important electrolyte. And then it also supports our DNA and our RNA synthesis. And what that means is it helps the cell repair itself and replicate itself. And that is also very crucial for our health. And then finally, it plays a really big part in bone health. And I know that calcium is obviously always thrown out there when we're talking about bone health, but it works really, it's got quite a big emphasis on bone health alongside vitamin D in addition to some calcium. But calcium seems to just have that spotlight of bone health. We just think calcium. We actually should be thinking magnesium.
Magnesium. Okay, so before I get into my story, which is going to tie into too much or too little of magnesium and then how it can harm you and signs and symptoms to look for, you brought up food. And I know that a lot of people will always ask, potassium-rich foods, you know, different minerals that we need and vitamins, how do we get them from food? What are some good options for people to get magnesium from foods?
Yeah, so magnesium is mostly going to be in plant foods, right? So if we're eating a lot of, let's say, animal proteins and stuff like that, salmon has some magnesium in it, but it's mostly going to be in plant foods such as like leafy greens, avocados, dark chocolate, almonds. So these are kind of pumpkin seeds, chia seeds. These are the big foods that are probably contain the most magnesium, tofu. So a lot of these are plant-based foods. And so if you're not a big plant-based eater, you're likely not getting the amount of magnesium that you probably should, even through food. And you have to be really like, you got to be really aware of kind of what you're eating because, you know, I don't know how many people measure, oh, I'm having a third cup of pumpkin seeds and those kinds of things. So if, you know, if I had to guess, we're probably not even getting close to the RDA value when it comes to magnesium-rich foods. But it's definitely a way where we can improve how we bring in magnesium. I never discount food. We may not get to the RDA value, but we can always use it to our advantage.
So let's say we have an athlete that sweats a lot or somebody that works outside or whatnot. Is that a potential way, because it's always replenish your electrolytes? So magnesium would fall into that category where your body could lose it by sweating, vomiting, things like that. Can that cause a loss of magnesium when we're grouping electrolytes into that category?
Yes, right? Because if we're looking at alcohol or caffeine intake, we know that that's going to increase the urinary magnesium output, right? So you're going to lose the magnesium through your urine. If you're sweating, you're using up that electrolyte part. So you'll lose like sodium, potassium, magnesium. And if you are doing this on a regular basis, and I mean, most athletes will usually use some form of electrolyte blend, whatever, a sachet, or at least do something for electrolytes. It's more for the individuals that are not doing that, because we're not replenishing it. We're kind of just chipping at that depletion of magnesium that's happening.
Yeah. See, and I do, just on a personal note, I do heavy, heavy amounts of cardio. And now I'm also taking Jardiance, which causes dehydration and frequent urination on top of it. So like somebody in my circumstance, you have to really watch it and make sure you're doubling down on everything. Because I think that sometimes people don't understand there is a loss going on, like we're talking about right now. And just because you're taking in a certain amount, you kind of have to factor in the difference in terms of the loss that you could encounter during the day, depending on what you're doing or medications you're on or things like that. So do you have certain medications that you know can cause either dehydration or like loss or inability to absorb magnesium well that people need to watch out for and be aware of that they're taking and note?
Yeah, you made an a really good point. And this is kind of how I go about figuring out how much magnesium I want to give a certain patient is, it's really important to understand the factors that actually deplete our magnesium, because there's a lot of them. And we mentioned a couple of them. We mentioned the alcohol or the caffeine or the sweating, but we also know that high sugar intake will use up your magnesium during metabolism. We know that gut health issues will impair absorption. So if you have Crohn's or some type of inflammatory bowel disease, you're not actually absorbing some of that magnesium. So that's going to be a problem. Medications, like you just mentioned. So antibiotics, diuretics, proton pump inhibitors, certain cancer drugs, birth control pills. These are all medications that are going to deplete magnesium as you're taking them. Some of these medications are prescribed to a lot of individuals, namely diuretics and proton pump inhibitors. And so we know that one out of every three people are on some form of medication that is depleting magnesium. So that's happening on a daily basis. We also know that blood sugar dysregulation, so if we have insulin resistance or type 2 diabetes, and we know that one out of every three people have insulin resistance, that is actually causing more urinary loss of magnesium. So it's going to affect your magnesium levels. And then stress. So both the physical and the emotional stress can also cause that magnesium to be lost through the urine. And so we have to keep all of these things into account when we're looking at somebody's picture and somebody who needs to supplement and how much they need to supplement based upon what's going on in their life or in their health. And one thing that I think I get a lot of questions on, and then people get very frustrated and upset, is that I can't say you need to take X amount of magnesium. And it's because I don't know that person's history, or I don't know that person's medical history, health history, lifestyle. And so for me, I can't just say, oh, go and take 700 milligrams of magnesium because I don't know if that's actually what you need. So what I often recommend is you should be at least meeting the RDA. And the RDA is between 310 and 420 milligrams per day. That's the minimum. I mean, I wouldn't go lower than that for sure.
But some people will need more than that because of these factors that actually deplete magnesium.
Very, very, very well said. I do a lot of hormone optimization people come to me for, and it's and I always get the, well, how do I lose weight or how much of this should I take? And I always tell everybody the same thing. I just don't have an answer for that until we sit down and like really, really dig in. And it pisses some people off because they just want a generic answer. But then there's the people that go, wow, you know, wow, I really want to hear this and get into it. And sometimes it sounds like you're dancing, like you're a politician, but in reality, it's we're really just trying to figure out what works for each individual person. And I used to get so mad at the bodybuilding magazines that would put out, oh, this is the best workout for everybody. Just like, come on, man, like, that's just ridiculous. So I'm going to dig in with you now on, I want to talk about taking in too much or having too little and side effects, and I'm going to relate it to something very idiotic that I did so you can rip it shreds. Okay, so we'll have some fun here. So
no judgment.
No. I like to talk about all the mistakes I made to help people learn and not do them. You know, I try to do that for everybody because I've made so many. So it makes it real easy to tell a story. So this is about, it's been about 9 years now. And so anyway, I started to idiotically work with a friend had recommended this company to me, and it turned out to be one of those pyramid type of deals. And so I had already kind of started realizing I got to start taking more supplements and things that I need for my health. And magnesium was high on the list. And I bought a supplement, started taking it. And then I started with this company and they had these different things. Well, I better take them and try them and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, long story short, you know, first it's, and this is a symptom of high magnesium, is it'll make you kind of have diarrhea, go to the bathroom too much, right? If you're taking in too much. And I was really having trouble sleeping, and then, well, it's going to help me sleep. Anyway, I didn't realize within the supplement that I had added in that it was loaded with magnesium. When I tell you loaded, it's saying like 1,000% of your daily value, which then throws up the red flag of how in the hell would somebody create something that has that much in it? So regardless, I'm taking in massive amounts of it, and I'm eating a lot of vegetables and green leafy vegetables. So anyway, out of nowhere, and mind you, I'm a to the T every day eating perfect training, I start having these, my heart just, I'm feeling irregular heartbeats. And it's not just why I overexerted myself. It's a thump here or a thump there. I'm talking frequent, and I'm talking to the point of where I am starting to get really scared. And it continuously happens. And I thought, okay, it's anxiety. I've had anxiety before. Can't figure it out. Finally, go to the cardiologist, EKG, clean, echocardiogram, clean, wear a Holte monitor for 2 nights where my wife had to bathe me because it's so odd, clean. No one can figure it out. And then finally, I don't know how I remember I figured it out, but I saw something. I don't know if it was God telling me or what it was, but I figured out and I was like, holy shit. I am taking like 20 times the amount of magnesium, and I'm looking for every possible thing on what can cause heart palpitations, and I'm like running into a dead end. And I'm known for figuring things out and no doctor can figure out. Anyway, long story short, I stopped taking it. Everything stopped. All of that stopped, right? So expound for me on my idiocy and tell people, you know, symptoms or like why that happens on high amounts or low amounts.
Yeah. Well, you actually mentioned something that plays into that. So you had said that you had anxiety. And so when you're bringing in lots of magnesium and you already have an anxious kind of picture or nature, then all that magnesium is going to work much too quickly for the neurotransmitters. And we see this with anxiety patients. They feel worse. And that's because it's just too much of a load at once. And so their body doesn't know how to respond. And so you will get things like palpitations, irregular heartbeats. Some people will have sweating. They'll just not feel good. And so what we do with anxiety or any type of patient that has any type of an anxiety nature is we start them really slow and we move them up. And they often don't require very much over the RDA limit just because of how their neurotransmitters work. So their GABA receptors. And we have to remember that magnesium attaches to the GABA receptor, right? And so when we flood that receptor, the body just can't respond that quickly. And so you start getting these symptoms that are actually what magnesium is supposed to help with, palpitations and irregular heartbeats and those kinds of things. And we're actually getting these symptoms. We're actually producing these symptoms because of that load. Now, on the other side of that picture is obviously not taking enough. And then we have deficiency symptoms, which are much more common than what I just talked about. Although you did admit too that you were taking a lot of magnesium. And so you were just possibly over flooding those receptors. And it was actually doing the reverse of what it should have been correcting. And so, yeah, this is definitely something that you don't want to be doing, because that's obviously not a good thing and you don't feel good. And it's just, it's not good for your body, right? More is not always better. I want to emphasize that right now. More is not always better, because what happens is as soon as we start talking about magnesium and all the things it does, I find that people go out and they just like take loads of it, and then they like, it's just too much, right? Your body has to adapt as well. And so we need to be cautious as to how much magnesium we are taking. And this is where this whole consumption of what's depleting your magnesium versus how much are you bringing in versus what are we trying to treat is going to come into play when we look at dosage. Now, low magnesium, on the other hand, this is also like deficiency symptoms are really broad, right? Fatigue, low energy, muscle cramps, twitching, tension headaches, anxiety, poor sleep. We can get numbness, tingling, palpitations, constipation. We could have digestive issues. We can have difficulty concentrating, so brain fog and those kinds of things. And the reason magnesium is not often thought of with any of those that I've just mentioned is because magnesium is involved in so many systems in the body. So nervous system, muscular, endocrine, cardiovascular. And when low levels are present, this can cause the symptoms to overlap into many other common health conditions. And so it gets overlooked. You know, so for instance, I'll give you an example. Something like fatigue is very general, and or brain fog, right? But what does that overlap with? That can overlap with a B12 deficiency, can overlap with thyroid issues, can overlap with something called chronic fatigue syndrome, can overlap with macronutrient deficiency. There's so many things that it can overlap in. And so what happens is all those things get done first, and we forget about this really important mineral that actually, as I mentioned at the very beginning, is responsible for ATP production, which is our energy currency. And so now, you can see how this often gets like imitated as other things.
Now, you've brought that up twice, and I have spent a great deal of time studying, you know, cells, mitochondria, cellular health and importance. And so this is touching home to me a little more so, because it's a area of, like with you with magnesium, where I take it very serious and I really put my heart into it. So can you expound on that just a little bit in terms of, we're talking about ATP production doses. So does this have a impact on cellular health and mitochondrial health? And could there, like, for instance, and I could be wrong here, you tell me, if we have a deficiency in magnesium, then that could carry over into some cellular issues or mitochondrial issues. Is that yes or no? And can you just talk about how these correlate together a little bit deeper than just the ATP production? Because I just want to know a little bit of the science behind it, and I think it would be helpful to people.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely there is a cellular component to this. So we have to remember that as of December 2023, magnesium is responsible for 800 enzymatic reactions in our body. So when I say enzymatic reactions, I'm talking cellular things that are happening. So either it acts as a cofactor or it acts as an enzyme for something. And when magnesium binds to something like ATP, which if you're good in biochemistry, you might understand oxidative phosphorylation,
Yes.
Or Krebs cycle, right? Krebs cycle. So what it does is it binds to that ATP molecule and it makes it biologically active. So in this, without being really into biochemistry, it kind of attaches and then that ATP molecule becomes biologically active. Now, without that, that cell cannot produce energy. So this is a cellular thing, right? We also know that it's involved in, if we look at more biochemical reactions, in glycolysis, so in glucose breakdown. So magnesium has dependent enzymes that are going to convert glucose into that usable energy, right? And so it's very important for blood sugar stability, for preventing these crashes that we see with blood sugar, insulin, insulin regulation. So these are all kind of cellular actions that are happening, but without magnesium, we really can't be we wouldn't function because you need that energy currency. You need that molecule to actually produce energy in order for that to do other things in your body. And so it has, you know, these 800 enzymatic reactions are mostly cellular or cofactor things that it's doing. One that's really important and it sometimes makes you understand why a lot of people are deficient in vitamin D. So vitamin D deficiency is on the rise, but that isn't coincidence that, you know, vitamin D is the only deficiency that we're really concerned about. We just don't talk about the magnesium deficiency part. We talk about the vitamin D deficiency. But in order for you to actually use the vitamin D that you're taking, so the vitamin D3 that you're intaking, it needs to have an enzymatic reaction that happens at the kidneys and the liver for that vitamin D to become active. So if you're taking vitamin D3 and you don't have enough magnesium, that enzymatic reaction is not happening and that vitamin D is not actually helping you in any sort of way because it can't actually become active. And I always get the kickback, well, I take D3 and that's active. Yes, that is the active form of vitamin D, but you still need to activate that in the body so the body can use that vitamin D3. And so when people take vitamin D and their numbers don't go up, this is a clear sign that we don't have that transaction happening at those two touch points for us to actually get that vitamin D to become activated and for our body to actually be able to use it.
Well said. Thank you. Thank you very much. And see, that's one of the things is when you have something going on and you can't figure out why, a lot of times it's not really a difficult find if you just look at all the numbers and have somebody that knows. Just so many people don't know, you know, and that's it. It saddens me, but it also makes me happy to be able to put this information out so people can at least have access to it and it's there if they just listen.
Absolutely.
I want to ask one thing that I forgot to ask you before I go further, and I want to talk about different forms of magnesium and things like that. But you know how when we started and you kept saying, and we were talking about the, you know, overprescribing, but you kept saying, but there is a place. And I do that too, you know, and I always say there is a place and there is a place. But did you ever notice when it's the other way around and you have the people or the doctors that push these so hard? They act like there's no place for natural treatment or other sorts of treatments. You ever notice how that happens? And that kind of, if that's not a huge red flag to people when that happens and there's not open-mindedness and everything. So I just wanted to bring that up and just get your thoughts real quick because it just dawned on me. We got going and I didn't bring that up. And you were so good about your explanation and you made me, like you make me trust you and feel because I see that you're really genuine about it. And that's how I do it too. And I'm always like, hey, there's a purpose for these things, but they're just misused. Why the total like disregard on the other side a lot of time? Not all the time, but a lot of time. Why do you find it to be so polarizing one way, but so fair the other way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's to education, right? So I don't know, but in Canada, our medical doctors, they don't get a lot of nutrition or natural education in their four-year degree at medical school. They, I believe, get, I might be wrong here, but they get something like one like semester, and it's one class basically in that semester that is more on nutrition, and they're learning more the biochemical aspects of nutrition, which is fine because they need to understand that if they're going to have prescribing rights and stuff like that. And yes, I agree. I find too, the older generation of family doctors and medical doctors, they're really, they don't have any education. So they really just don't believe that there is anything other than the medications and whatever the medical community prescribes. But I feel like that is turning, especially here in Ontario. I have medical doctors that refer to me. They refer me their patients when they can't deal with them. So if they have digestive issues or they have an inflammatory condition or an autoimmune condition, or I do a lot of metabolic health, I get the referrals from them because they're starting to see that there is another option out there. And like you said, it's not everybody, unfortunately, but it's starting to turn a little bit. And I'm really grateful for that. And I'm really hopeful that that continues, because I think that we are in a society and in a world that both medicines can work. And like I said, I am not anti-drugs or anti-medication. I believe there's a time and place for everything. But I think too, that we can do so much better than what we're doing, than just slapping, you know, a medication on somebody and they're taking it for the rest of their lives. I mean, things like PPIs, like proton pump inhibitors, you know, now we're getting some of that research coming out that they shouldn't be on a proton pump inhibitor for 20 years. They should be on it for like, you know, 2 weeks or a month. And so that stuff is starting to turn, but, you know, we need to make room for both. And I think that, you know, that is starting to happen in the newer generation of physicians coming into practice. I see that way more than maybe the seasoned doctors that have been around and have just always done it this way.
So that's the second or third time you've mentioned proton pump inhibitors. So just real quick, can you just give a quick little explanation of what that actually is and maybe just an example of one or two?
Yeah. So omeprazole is like a proton pump inhibitor. It's basically for acid reflux. Or heartburn or gastritis. They will use it for all three of those. And if you have any of those symptoms or it's chronic, they will give you a proton pump inhibitor, which will lower your stomach acid and allow for the tissue not to be so irritated and aggravated and inflamed. And it kind of helps resolve the inflammatory part of what we would know in gastritis. Or with reflux, we don't have that acid kind of pushing up into the esophagus. So it's a very common medication. Pantoprazole is also another one, and it's prescribed now more so on a very temporary basis. So I have patients that have been on it for 10, 15 years, and obviously we're transitioning them off of this. And of course, we have to do it very carefully because rebound is very common in these medications. So we have to do it at a very slow pace. But now, most family doctors, most gastroenterologists, they're putting these PPIs or proton pump inhibitors, you know, 2 week, 4 week trial to kind of reset things and then have patients work on improving some of the foods they eat or what they're doing after they're eating and all of those things. So it's starting to come around. And that's just because we're getting more research about, you know, them possibly causing kidney damage and those kinds of things. So.
Sure. Okay. Well, thanks for the explanation. I had to ask because that's not commonly discussed at all. And so I thought it would be nice to touch on. Okay. I know I only have a certain amount of time with you. So I know this is going to be a little bit of a breakdown here. So many different forms of magnesium anymore. And you go in and you see, you go into a Walgreens or a supermarket or whatever, and you see a magnesium supplement that's like $5, $6, $7. And then you see these complexes that are $30 and $40, and you you know, people just pick one up. They don't even know what they're grabbing half the time. And it's, well, this one's cheaper. I'm just going to grab this. And I guarantee you 60, 70% of the people never turn it around and even look or know what's even in what they're taking. So that being said, let's talk about the different types. And, you know, obviously there's going to be certain needs for different people, but maybe you could talk about different types, maybe the ones that are the most important and what needs they fulfill, and maybe even bring up some good combination supplements or different blends of types of magnesium that you find to be more essential or efficient.
Okay. I'm not sure you're going to like my answer on that point, but we'll get there in a second.
I'm going to like any answer you give because it's true.
Yeah. So you're definitely right. There's lots of forms of magnesium, and it can get very confusing when you're standing in front of a wall full of different magnesium bottles, but it's really important that you know the form, because dose and form are going to matter as to your outcome of whatever it is that you're trying to correct or improve upon. And it's also the reason I wrote my last book about, because it's all on the different forms, because this is the most common question I get on social media, anywhere I go, any talk I do. This is one of the most common things that people don't understand and need to be understanding if they want to make good options or choosing options that are good for what they're trying to improve. So I'm going to go through kind of the top common ones that you would see. Some of them are not as common, but the common ones that you will find are glycinate or bisglycinate. It's the exact same form. It's just some companies will say glycinate, some will put the bisglycinate in front of it. But this is a really general, all-around great form of magnesium. It's very calming. It's good on digestion. It's good for sleep. It's good for nervous system support. I use it a lot because one benefit with glycinate is that it doesn't require stomach acid for its absorption. So it's really great for people who have absorption issues. As I said earlier, somebody like who has Crohn's disease or celiac or colitis, these people have trouble absorbing their minerals and nutrients. And so this form of magnesium is really good for that issue and for like a nice support all around form. So we can kind of use this as a beautiful blanket to treat a lot of different things. And then we have magnesium citrate. So citrate used to be the common form before bisglycinate came onto the scene. And citrate is well absorbed, but we have to watch the laxative effect on citrate. So citrate is great for the digestive process. So I use it a lot in reflux. I use it a lot in constipation, or if somebody is not having good bowel movements while we're working on improving that gut health, we're putting citrate in there so that they can have more efficient bowel movements. And citrate is going to bring water into that digestive tract and help to move things along. So it's really great at doing those kinds of things. The next one I would say, malate is also a big one that I use. And malate is going to be really targeted towards energy, fatigue. So people who have chronic fatigue syndrome, and it's also targeted towards muscle pain. So tender points, joint pain, so fibromyalgia-like pains. We love giving malate because malate actually is happening in that Krebs cycle, so in that energy cycle, and so is very good for those types of conditions or anybody who just has like really low energy or fatigue. This is very helpful. Then we have threonate, which is a newer form of magnesium, and this one is special because it crosses the blood-brain barrier. So it's going to be supporting cognition, memory. It helps with mood disorders like anxiety, depression, those kinds of things. Threonate is getting a lot of research in the cognitive space, in the memory space. There's a great study out there where they took this threonate over 12 weeks in patients that had cognitive decline. So they were aged patients, and they had some form of cognitive decline. And they were able to, at the end of that 12 weeks, improve their brain age, their cognitive age, by 9 years. So this is pretty like amazing.
Yeah.
When, you know, 3 months or 4 months, and you have that kind of a result. So it's often a more expensive form of magnesium. I like to mention that because it is, like you said, not going to be $7 for a bottle. And it's also dosed in much lower dosing, right? So it's usually 50, 75, 80 milligrams. But what makes it very confusing for patients is they'll say 2000 milligrams of magnesium. But really what we need to focus on is what is the elemental part of that magnesium? What is the absorbed part of that magnesium that we're going to get? And that's usually much lower because it is crossing that blood-brain barrier. And we have orotate. This is also another not so common one, but works fabulous for heart health and mitochondrial function. It is pretty much studied in those two areas. Really great for blood pressure, really great for any type of heart cardiovascular issue. If you want to improve mitochondrial function, it's great in that department as well. And sometimes it's also paired with magnesium taurate, which is also really great for cardiovascular health and nervous system health. So those two kind of are great when we're dealing with predominantly like cardiovascular issues. And then, of course, we have chloride. Now, chloride is usually not available in a pill. It's usually in a topical, so like oils or sprays or in trace minerals. So if you have trace mineral drops, you will see magnesium chloride being in there, or you will see it in the topical applications of magnesium. This is a hit and miss with a lot of people. So chloride is great for bringing depleted magnesium levels up, but it comes with some costs. So a lot of people get GI issues with it, or if they're using it topically, it can sting and burn. And so that is not usually very favorable. So yeah, there's that issue, but that's usually where we find chloride. And then we have the Epsom salts, which is magnesium sulfate. And obviously we would be using that in bath, which works for primarily muscle relaxation and probably some stress reduction. Now, you had said something about single form versus these complex forms.
Yes.
And the problem, here's the problem with complex forms. Complex forms will usually include anywhere from 3 to, I've seen up to 7 different magnesium forms in a complex. And I guess the pro is that you're getting multiple forms of magnesium in one product, but the form is much smaller. So the dose is much smaller. You're not getting therapeutic levels in these complexes. And oftentimes, if you are trying to correct something or use magnesium for a specific purpose, you want to be using therapeutic levels. And if we can't get to therapeutic levels, you're likely not going to get the benefit of that magnesium. And so, yes, the multiforms are more expensive. The other thing I don't like is a lot of them will put magnesium oxide in there as a buffer, but they won't disclose how much oxide is in there. And so that becomes a real problem, because if you have 5 forms in there and one of them is oxide and the supplement capsule is 300 milligrams, how do we know how much of that 300 milligrams is actually oxide? And magnesium oxide, we don't absorb. Less than 4% gets absorbed. Where I like oxide is if we have to do a bowel clear out, or somebody is very constipated and you just need to get them to go to the bathroom, oxide works fantastic. It's a great laxative. You don't absorb it, so you don't need to worry about overdosing the patient. And it works quite quickly. If they take it at night, they're going to the bathroom the next day. So that is my problem with the multiforms. So yeah. Like if sleep is the goal and you've got malate in there and citrate and bisglycinate, you're probably not get a good response, because first of all, malate's going to wake you up, right? It's going to give you that energy. And we just don't know how much of each is in there. And a lot of companies will not disclose that. You'll either see it under a proprietary blend, or they're just not willing to disclose how much is in there. And then I think a giveaway too, if you're using a magnesium form and you see it's more than like 200 milligrams per capsule, it's usually a red flag. Magnesium's a big molecule. And this is why they use oxide in the multiforms, because it acts as a buffer, because oxide is actually, they can increase the volume of magnesium in the supplement by using oxide. So you'll often see oxide at 800 milligrams in a capsule, and that's because it's so small. But all the other magnesium components, because they're attached to
other molecules like glycine or citric acid or malic acid, they're not going to be able to put more than 200 milligrams into a capsule at one point. So I think if you're doing something specific, I would stick to the single form that best matches what you're trying to do and take the therapeutic dose of that versus spending your money on a multi-form. And you're probably not going to achieve the outcome that you want. And a lot of them are very expensive. And a lot of them are also on these subscription services.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
So the malic acid, for example, that helps with absorption. Is that correct?
The malic acid. So that's what malate is made of, right? So magnesium malate is a magnesium molecule and a malic acid molecule. And that's what malate is made of. And so that would be and malic acid is in the Krebs cycle. So that's going to provide energy, right? So if that's in a combo supplement and you're taking that combo supplement to sleep, you're not going to be sleeping probably, especially if they actually use like 100 milligrams, which is what you might be looking at for a malate supplement. So it's really dependent upon what you want to address. Mm-hmm. And single forms are usually, I just have found better outcomes.
So just for going over what you said there, so we really want to make sure when we're looking at these that it's 200 milligrams or less in each single capsule, ideally, correct?
In the single forms, yeah.
In the single forms. Okay, got it. And so I realize that this is person to person specific, but is there one form that's more essential for anybody, or is it really just take what is needed by the specific individual? Because, you know, some people might say, well, I don't have this or this or this, which one should I take? You know, you're going to get those random generic questions. And so what do you say to that?
Bisglycinate or glycinate, right? So yeah. It's kind of the all around form. It kind of touches on everything. Really, what we have to remember too is magnesium is really hard to get into the cell, right? And so these addition. So bisglycinate or glycinate, it has two glycine molecules that are attached to the magnesium. That's what's getting it into the cell. But what comes with that is also benefits from that glycine. So you will get that relaxation. You will get that magnesium working for you once it gets into the cell. And so this is why when we're looking at something that's maybe just you want to touch on everything, bisglycinate is going to be your best option. It's a great all-around form, and it's highly absorbable. It doesn't have that laxative effect. Usually not a problem for people's digestive system. Like they're not going to get cramping and all these other things. And so that is the one that I would say is a great all-around form that you can kind of apply if some of the other forms aren't there, or you just want to take magnesium. And again, it helps with absorption because it doesn't need your stomach acid to actually absorb.
Okay. I'm going to ask you this anyway. In terms of general recommended dose, we've already covered that it's, you know, there's a lot of factors that really go into it. But just, I know you get this question all the time. Is it like 400 milligrams a day? Is it like 250? And mind you, everybody listening, we've covered this. If you're just listening to a clip of this, it's different for everybody. So there's a lot of differentiating factors, but let's just generalize this in terms of, I don't know, the standard recommended dose for a person. Where would you be in line with that?
Right. And just to preface, like, that's not medical advice at all, but.
Right.
Yeah. So the standard dose that I usually deal with is somewhere between 400 and 600 milligrams for most individuals. And unless there's something really serious going on and we might have to dose higher, I have dosed as high as 1,000 and 1,200 milligrams. But I would say the standard dose is somewhere between 400 and 600 milligrams. And it's, again, like we said, dependent upon what's going on in that person's life. But that seems to be a good kind of range for a lot of people. If we're doing that in something like citrate, we are obviously titrating because remember, citrate has the mild laxative effect. So some people are a little bit more sensitive. So we
right.
want to make sure that we're going a little slower. So we will start at 200 and kind of move up until we get to the dose. But a lot of, like, even if you're looking at the research for magnesium and oftentimes in the research, they will tell you that, you know, these people took X amount. A lot of it is in that range, in the 400 to 600 milligrams per day. Like, citrate also has some evidence for migraine prevention. And I sometimes will use citrate for migraine specifically, but I've also used 3 and 8 and I've had really great results. But like, the research will tell you, you need 600 milligrams of citrate for migraine prevention. And you really do need that amount because we've tried it out, but you can't just start somebody on citrate at 600 milligrams because you're going to have them in the bathroom and they're not going to be very happy with you. So it is a little bit of a work to get up to that amount, but you can definitely titrate and train the body to accept it.
Okay. I got one more question. I know we're running over, but this is your fault because you're too smart. I'm blaming it on you. It's not my time management. Okay. My wife would disagree with that, but we're going to roll with that story today.
Okay.
No, it's honestly a testament to how damn good this conversation is. And this is important. And I'm sure you're going to agree with me on this. How are we determining like the amount somebody needs? So how are we testing their magnesium levels? How could someone that just a random person go, well, how do I test my magnesium? Do you just go and mind you, it may not just be the blood test, because I think we discussed this and you kind of corrected me, but they don't, on a standard blood test, they don't even test that anyway. You have to go ask for it specifically. So how are we looking at that and testing it to get an accurate gauge of where we're actually sitting?
Great question. I'm so glad you asked this, because this is also another common question. Yes, testing magnesium is not easy. So on standard blood work, they usually will test something called serum magnesium. And so this is basically the magnesium that's in the blood. This is not reliable. So whatever your number is on that number, and I would say 90% of the population is within range when they are testing serum magnesium. And that is because only 1% of magnesium is in your blood. So that's all you're testing, is 1% of that magnesium. So it is not a reliable test for us to say you have sufficient magnesium. Now, step number two, you would go to what's called a red blood cell magnesium blood test. Now, this is more accurate, but also not perfect. And although this is a little bit more accurate, you also want to be at the very high end range of whatever the range is for whatever the lab is that you're using. So if the range is 1 to 4, we want to be at 4 in order to be not deficient. And then probably the best, and it's a little bit invasive, is a tissue biopsy, because 60% of our magnesium is in the bones and in the tissues. And so that is why a tissue biopsy is going to probably be the most accurate. It's very invasive. You're probably not going to line up to have this done, because I know I wouldn't. But the research also suggests that even if your tissue biopsy was normal in the range, you could still be magnesium deficient. And that's because we still have bones, right, that are absorbing this magnesium. And so we have to really go by symptoms. We go by deficiency symptoms. We know that magnesium needs are going to increase with age. So if there's somebody in front of me that is 70 or 75, I know right away their magnesium is way more different than somebody who's sitting in front of me who's 30. So we know it increases with age. We know it increases with stress or chronic stress. We know illness increases the magnesium load. We know high activity levels. So the things we know that deplete magnesium, we have to take those into account. And we really just need to kind of work out what that patient is trying to achieve, take the differences where we're losing the magnesium, and then kind of work it in. And like I said before, I know we can't get all of our magnesium from diet, but diet is always added on to that supplementation, because I just look at it as a bonus. Like, if we can get more, you know, plant foods and green leafy greens into your diet, it's going to benefit you in multiple different ways. But yeah, it's hard to test magnesium status, and it's just because of where it is and how hard it is to know, you know, to get a proper test to tell you what's available in the body at that time.
Awesome. I appreciate the breakdown. I knew you were going to love that question, but I think that may have been one of the most important questions I asked today. Yeah. I mean, realistically, because there's just a lot of not good understanding on how to go about this. So I really appreciate not only that, but I appreciate how thorough and passionate and knowledgeable and how just genuine you are with all of this. And you can really see that in your delivery and your work. And I've watched it, I've studied it, and this has been a really, really fun and joyful interview for me. And I appreciate all of your effort and time.
I'm so grateful that you had me come on your show. I'm always very, very happy to talk about this mineral and to educate as much as we can, because I think if we know more about it, then we can do more with it as well. And I think I just want to leave like a closing thought, because a lot of people will think that magnesium is just either going to take one pill and their life is going to be magic better. And, you know, I would love that too, but it isn't quite that quick. It's a foundational nutrient, and it's something that helps your body run the way it was designed to run. And if you give your body that attention, that magnesium, you're going to be supporting hundreds of systems all at once. Because remember, I said 800 enzymatic reactions. And so oftentimes you will not notice, you know, your energy improving after one capsule or two capsules, but you will notice it in a week or two that maybe your mood's better, or maybe your energy is better, or your resilience to stress is better. And those are the things that we're really after. But we also want to make sure that those 800 enzymatic reactions are working properly.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for all of that. Now, I'll link everything in the description for you as well, but what are the best places to follow you? Do you have literature? Is there ways people can consult with you? Just lay it out for everybody.
Yeah, I think my biggest platform and where I'm most active, especially on magnesium front, is on Instagram. So it's just at Dr. Barb Woger, just my name. And I also have a book that I just recently published in May, I believe it came out, and that's called Mastering Magnesium. It goes through all the magnesium forms in detail with absorption rates. I also quote a lot of studies in there that and what their dosage ranges were, again, because, you know, you can take that, but I just can't tell you take this. I will always tell you to take the recommended dietary allowance amount. I also have the other half of that book is I've come up with lots of magnesium rich recipes and have given you how much magnesium you're getting from that specific recipe. So just so we can incorporate more foods that are going to support our magnesium levels. I always give this to my patients, because if they can get that extra in, it's just bonus. And then I also wrote a much more detailed book with Dr. James D. Nicolantonio called Magnesium, the Missing Mineral, where we go into actual health conditions, and we've broken it down into brain disorders and mood disorders, cardiovascular, kidney, metabolic, all of it. And that's also, both of those books are available on Amazon.
I have to check that out. You're great. He's great. And there's a ton of good information. That would be awesome. Thanks for sharing all of that. So I'll link everything in the description too. And like I said, it's been a true pleasure to have you here. I've learned a ton, and I'm sure that my listeners are going to really appreciate all of this. So, all right, everybody, that wraps up another amazing episode. I appreciate you tuning in. Stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Dr. Barb signing off.